Welcome to WISO Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenney. On today's program, we've got this week's edition of Politics Ohio. NPR commentator Julie Zickafoos is forced to ask a question, and WYSO music director Nikki Dakota continues her weekly talks with longtime WYSO volunteers. Today, Nikki and Conrad Balliot's conversation takes an interesting turn. Don't miss that. Also on today's program, poet Herb Martin. But first, North Carolina artist Patrick Dougherty is known internationally for creating twisting, towering public sculptures made of mere twigs. Dougherty recently came to Dayton to install There Is a Wiggle in Its Walk, a new creation at the Wegerson Gardens Metro Park. Building the artwork has been a group effort involving over 100 community volunteers. After a month-long installation process, the sculpture officially opens to the public with a ribbon-cutting ceremony on May 5th. WYSO Community Voices producer Susan Burns has the story.
When I arrive at Wegerson Gardens Metro Park, I see an undulating tangle of brush rising well over 10 feet high. I wind my way through the maze of branches to find the artist Patrick Dougherty, who's been in Dayton building a site-specific sculpture for the park. Known for creating whimsical, one-of-a-kind works that bridge art and nature, Dougherty describes the new sculpture.
Well, initially what my interest was to make some kind of a effigy. That was my starting point, like the Fort Ancient Indians before people came here from Europe. They had effigy mounds in the Ohio Valley. So my thought was that if I made kind of a serpent mound here, that we could have this kind of serpent or serpentine object that wandered in and slithered around but amongst the bushes that are already existing here, that would seemingly invade the space with a somewhat crawling-looking thing that barged into the order and the decorum and kind of messed it up a little bit.
Are people allowed to walk through it?
Well, that's the beauty of it, that you'd be able to walk through the many doors and look through the many windows into the coils of this serpentine thing, and so it makes inner courtyards as well.
Dougherty has installed over 200 sculptures worldwide, and as a result, is highly skilled at collaborating with volunteers who assist in building his works. Because his art has gained such widespread appeal, helpers for this project are abundant. Groups of people weave small branches into much larger forms while the artist wanders through the site providing instructions.
If you make little looping lines along the bottom, it tends to lift this whole thing up.
Volunteers Dion and Jean share thoughts about working on the sculpture.
It's great to see everyone out here volunteering, and people are happy to come back.
And it's a definite piece of art. We always used to think of art as a picture in a museum or a sculpture. Now, at last, we've discovered the art of nature.
What is the material that this is made of?
Well, it's primarily willow. There might be a few stragglers of other varieties. Anyway, it's fun to work with. It's pretty flexible. At least some of it is flexible. You might hear some cracking in the background as people break the big ones, but we've got there you go. That was a crack.
Is this the largest sculpture you've made?
By linear feet, I think it's about 200 feet of walls and walking space, so that's pretty large and probably would be the largest that you would walk through.
You can experience Patrick Dougherty's new sculpture called There Is a Wiggle in Its Walk at Wegerson Gardens Metro Park on Siebenthaler Road in Dayton. The piece will open to the public on Thursday, May 5th, and will be on display through 2013. To see more of Dougherty's work, visit his website at stickwork.net. For more information on Dougherty's Dayton project, call Wegerson Gardens at 937-277-6545 or visit the website metroparks.org. From Wegerson Gardens, this is Susan Burns for WYSO.
The WYSO Community Voices Project is well underway and will have more stories coming in the months ahead. Up next on WYSO, every Monday on Excursions, Nikki Dakota pays homage to a longtime WYSO volunteer, and today it's our pleasure to bring you her conversation with our very own Conrad Balliot. Nikki and Conrad's discussion turns to the poetry of Bob Dylan.
talking about which songs that we would do in association with this. And I was thinking of songs that mention poets in them and songs that I particularly love. And chief among those is this Bob Dylan tune that we're about to hear, Tangled Up in Blue. There's he mentions a 13th century poet. We'll find out a little bit more about that. But I have loved this song for so long, and I feel like I know it so well that it is my friend. It's family, this person. Walk this song, sit up at the table with me, I wouldn't even be surprised. You have learned, you have some things to teach me about this song.
Actually, I knew Bob Dylan. I mean, I know some of the popular ones, but I had never heard this song. And you played it for me once, and you gave me a copy. And when I started looking at it and working through it, it triggered the professorial response.
Yeah.
I did some research on it. It's a fascinating, amazing piece of writing.
And it starts, we want to play just the first verse, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the song, and then we'll listen to it in its entirety. But you have taught me that this song is a sonnet, and can you just briefly give the textbook professorial definition of sonnet?
Well, a sonnet is a 14-line poem, and it has different forms. There's a Petrarchan sonnet, a Shakespearean sonnet. There are many varieties today of other kinds of sonnets, but basically it's a 14-line poem.
So here's one of my all-time favorite songs, which I only now, all these years later, have learned is a sonnet. Stay tuned.
Early one morning, the sun was shining. I was laying in bed, wondering if she'd changed it all, if her hair was still red. Her folks, they said our lives together sure was gonna be rough. They never did like Mama's homemade dress. Papa's banquet wasn't big enough. And I was standing on the side of the road, rain falling on my shoes, heading out for the East Coast. Lord knows I've paid some dues getting through, tangled up in blue.
We'll come back to that and listen to it, but that sets the tone. They all follow that pattern from that. It's a sonnet, Bob Dylan's sonnet, Tangled Up in Blue.
Right, and in the copy you gave me, there are 7 stanzas, and every stanza has 14 lines. And there are rhymes in there, sonnets. Shakespearean sonnet, he refers to Petrarch.
Dylan, in this song.
He refers to a 13th century Italian poet. And actually, Petrarch was the 14th century, but Dylan isn't exact on the day.
He took poetic license. He's
all over the place, actually. He's sung the song in different times and places. He's sung it differently. People have asked him who the poet was.
But he makes reference to, because he doesn't say the name.
He said Plutarch at one point, which is a Greek poet, and he just got mixed up because it's quite clearly he had Petrarch in mind.
That has always been one of the lines that stood out to me, that she handed him the book of poems written by an Italian poet from the 13th century. And every one of them words rang true and glowed like burning coal, poured off of every page like it was written in my soul from me to you. I felt that the first time I ever had it. My body felt what he was saying. I was just like, wow. So thought that.
But from the professor's point of view, he also says, like burning coal, which is a simile. And that's one of the things poets do. They have these fancy devices, and he has those in there.
It's a pretty brilliant piece of work, isn't it?
It is. And take the lines, Shakespearean sonnet, every other line will rhyme. A, B, A, B, C, D, C, D, E, F, E, F, G, G.
Wow.
You look at the first stanza, it has bed and red, and then it goes enough and rough, and then it goes, shoes.
And through, yeah.
And it lines up then with through and blue. And there's a couplet at the end. The last two lines rhyme.
Is it common that, because he tags it out each time with tangled up in blue, is that a sonnet to repeat a single last line?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sonnet, Shakespeare's sonnets always end with the last two lines rhyming.
Yeah.
And in the last two lines of this song, something always rhymes with blue.
Isn't that something? And so, but also, he does end every stanza with "Tangled Up in Blue." With those, is that common that they would repeat
refrains.
Or sonnets, just one.
It's usually, well, sometimes there's a series of sonnets. They don't always have a refrain as he does.
Yeah.
But refrain is another part of the poem.
Yeah. Well, shall we have a listen through? Oh, you go ahead.
Well, yeah. He also uses metaphors. In fact, Tangled Up in Blue. What exactly is Tangled Up in Blue?
Yeah. I don't know, but I've been
it. It doesn't have a literal meaning, but it has a figurative meaning that comes out of it. And then he alludes to Petrarch. Allusion is a poetical technique as well. And it's just marvelous. Mm-hmm. And there's the rhythm that is an intense part of poetry, and there is emotion, which is also part of poetry.
The song just has it all.
Yes.
In case you're wondering, it's the lead track on the very excellent album from First Note to Final Sustain called Blood on the Tracks. Pleasure to host Conrad Balliet today.
Early one morning the sun was shining. I was laying in bed, wondering if she'd changed it all, if her hair was still red. Her folks, they said our lives together sure was gonna be rough. They never did like Mama's homemade dress, Papa's banquet wasn't big enough. And I was standing on the side of the road, rain falling on my shoes, heading out for the East Coast. Lord knows I paid some dues getting through, tangled up in blue.
This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for making us a part of your Sunday morning. Wrapping up National Poetry Month, we present a final reading from the Dayton Metro Library. Herb Martin is a local poet, retired Wright State professor, and an expert on the life and work of Paul Laurence Dunbar.
You know, we worry about those philosophical questions. Did the tree in the woods make a sound when nobody was there to hear it, and that kind of thing. And so I decided that I wanted to try and answer this whole business of why the pig crossed the road, which is another, I think, philosophical question. And therefore, it's called Ruminations and Other Attempts to Explain Why the Pig Crossed the Road as Related to Me by the Pig. Give me 3 minutes, and I will tell you what the pig told me. He said it was for the greater good, because it was the road less traveled by, and a surreal road to be sure, and because it wasn't a night out for animal, beast, or man. It was a road with a hysterical inevitability. The road was there and needed conquering. The pig wanted to see if he couldn't transcend the road. And besides, Mae West had invited him to come up and see her sometime. And the only way he could do that was to cross the road. The road itself put national security in jeopardy. The road forced the pig to take the Fifth Amendment. The pig was being chased by an axe of Freudian influences, and it, therefore, became necessary for him to cross the road. 42 other pigs had threatened to cross the same road. 57 other pigs had accomplished the task of crossing. This pig was to be the 100th to try. The pig wanted to prove he could reach the other side. Beside, he was the pig who always went to the market. And once, as he left the market, he accidentally farted, and the awful smell forced him to cross the road. Ultimately, crossing the road was an act of French resistance. Philosophically, the road had always been there and been the next logical step. The pig crossed the road because it could not stop for death. The pig had been warned about a police speed trap 2 blocks away. The pig truly did not suspect he was a pig. The pig crossed the road because he wanted to preach the good news about a dark and rainy night and the perils of going back and forth, because that was the only tried and true practice method for getting to Carnegie Hall. And besides, he had a key to the presidential black box, which contained the switch to the lights in that great hall. And because he wanted to put in an appearance, because the news of his slaughter had been greatly exaggerated.
Across the U.S., gas and oil prices are going up, and people may be paying a little more attention to their traveling habits. And so today on Why So Weekend, NPR commentator Julie Zickefoose is forced to ask a completely unrelated question. Is my car gay?
As you might suspect, cash for clunkers went over big in my part of Appalachian, Ohio. Clunkers are us. So much so that I had to drive 3 hours to find a dealer that had a new model left on the lot that I wanted to buy. Since I knew that the bottom would drop out of this $3 billion program very soon, I decided to act without further delay. I left our old green Ford Explorer on the lot with its outspoken bumper stickers, its 178,000 miles and all. I made them promise not to take it to the back lot to execute it until after I drove away in my new Subaru Forester. Although it occurred to me to throw myself on its hood and really let her rip right there in front of the three skinny salesmen taking their cigarette breaks, I kept it together. Truth be told, I am too high on new car upholstery fumes to care now. To get into a car where everything works, where both back doors open from the inside, where the back hatch can be unlocked with a key, which does not stink of mouse piddle, and has no candy wrappers anywhere at all, no dum-dums stuck into the carpet, no slashes in the upholstery, no straw woven into the cargo carpet, no horsefly carcasses stuck in the windshield crevice, no nasty stains, no mouse fluff or mildew in the air conditioner, and less than 200 miles on the odometer. Oh, it is too rich. No one could deserve such largesse. A car that goes when you tell it to with verve and alacrity and speed. A car that corners instead of careens. A car that will take me to town 6 more times on a fill than the old one would. A car with heated front seats and 16 presets for my favorite radio stations. Little matter it that there are only 4 stations to choose from. I am in love with my Subaru Forester. But there is another angle to my joy. My husband is looking for a rainbow bumper sticker and one with a lavender equal sign. I know him well enough to know that he will apply them in the dark of night and let me drive around for days without knowing they're there. I've been the butt of endless jokes from my friends, male and female, having to do with a possible sudden midlife change in my sexual orientation. I keep checking. Despite his shenanigans, I'm still nuts about Bill after 18 years together. I have unrequited crushes on Johnny Depp, John Cusack, and Adam Lambert. Okay, minus a half point for that last one. Really, I don't feel any different. I wanted all-wheel drive, decent fuel economy, 6 airbags, a moonroof, and a lot of cargo room. Is that gay? If any bumper stickers go on my Forester, I'll make a lavender one with a rainbow on it that says, I just like the car, okay? If you're as baffled as I was, just Google Subaru Forester lesbian. You'll find 24,000 returns. It's out there. I don't know how it started, but I'm not making it up. Whatever. If you see a green Subaru rolling along an Ohio highway with a raised fist sticking out of the sunroof, it'll be me, driving out loud, driving proud.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Emily McCord. I'm joined today by Karen Kassler. She's the State House News Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Emily.
The Ohio House this week has offered its version of the budget, and there are some notable differences between theirs and Governor Kasich's. Can we start with school funding? What's changed here?
Well, the governor is still taking a lot of heat for the cuts that he made to schools, and so it was expected that House members would probably try to maybe mitigate some of those cuts. And so what they did was they added about $80 million over 2 years to schools. Not a lot. They say it's an extra $23 per student, but it's still not a lot. They still preserve most of the cuts and preserve the idea that wealthier school districts will take bigger cuts than poorer districts because, in the governor's view, wealthier districts have more of an ability to raise funds from their communities. But the House budget does indeed add another $80 million to school funding, and it also protects schools in terms of their state losses. They can't lose more than 20% of their state funding. Now, the governor says nobody is taking more than an 8% hit, but when you add in all these other things that schools are losing with federal stimulus dollars and with payments from taxes that are no longer being collected because of tax reform that was done in 2005, a lot of school districts are saying they're losing a ton of money and that this may not be enough to really help them. But that's what the House budget did, and it allows House members to actually say, hey, we put more money into the budget than the governor did, which is, I think, something that they had wanted to be able to do.
The Ohio House has also been talking about repealing the estate tax. How does this compare with Kasich's budget?
Well, the repeal of the estate tax was not in Governor Kasich's budget. It's a bill that's been here in the House for quite a while, since basically the beginning of the year. And the House budget actually puts it in and repeals the estate tax starting in 2013. This is another blow to local governments. Local governments get 80% of the estate tax revenue. And so they were already getting hit in the budget, a 25% cut in the first year of Governor Kasich's budget, 50% in the second. That pretty much stays the same in the House version of the budget, but the House also does create this fund that will give out grants to local governments to help them deal with the loss of funds and to try to get them to do things like share services. And so, you know, this is yet another blow in a way to local governments who were hoping maybe to get a little bit more back from House members. The budget also does limit the total phase out of the tangible personal property tax and the kilowatt hour tax. So that may be a little bit of a buffer, but for the most part, the penalty that local governments are suffering, the loss of money that they are experiencing is going to continue in the House budget as well.
So what is the reaction like from Democrats in the Ohio House?
Well, predictably, they're not impressed, but they really don't have a lot that they can say because the House is controlled by Republicans. The Senate is dominated by Republicans. You know, Democrats were upset at the governor's budget to begin with. And while this budget does make some changes, it for example, strips out prison sentencing reform and adds another prison to the list of the five that the state is going to sell. You know, these are some pretty big differences, but for the most part, the governor's overall vision has been preserved in the House version of the budget. So needless to say, Democrats are not pleased. They weren't happy with Governor Kasich's budget. This budget, they actually feel, spends more money and does less to help schools and local governments than even the governor's budget. So, you know, they're not happy about it, as we would expect.
Where does the House's version of the budget go from here?
Well, the House has actually been hearing testimony on the governor's budget for several weeks, even though House members and leaders only proposed their version of the budget on Thursday. This actually continues on with the hearings that have been going on, and there's a whole flurry of budget testimony scheduled, even over the weekend, which is kind of unusual. They plan to have a House committee vote on this budget on Tuesday. It could go to the House floor on Wednesday. So it feels like it's very fast. But the House leadership will say, hey, we've been dealing with this for several weeks. It goes to the Senate then after it passes the House, because we assume it's going to pass the House since Republicans do control the House. When it goes over to the Senate, it slows down a bit because the Senate has to start all over. The Senate may have its own version of the budget. It's going to certainly have some changes to throw in there. I would think prison sentencing reform would be a big thing that the senators are going to look at, since Senator Bill Seitz from Cincinnati has been on top of sentencing reform for many, many years. So, you know, that's where it slows down a little bit once it gets into the Senate.
I've been speaking with Karen Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
That's it for this week's edition of Why So Weekend on member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield. I'm Jerry Kenney. If you missed any part of today's program, you can listen online at WYSO.org. Before we go, I want to let you know about an event on the WYSO community calendar. Chamber Music Yellow Springs hosts a competition for professional ensembles tonight from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Presbyterian Church in Yellow Springs. For more information on this event or to see what else is happening in the Miami Valley, visit WYSO.org and click on events. You can even submit your own event to the station. Once again, thanks for joining us. Up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.